This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hey, welcome to a Thursday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, ready to rock and roll here as we get ever closer. Steve, we are now officially 3 weeks away from the 2023 NFL Draft.
The draft starts on a Thursday?
Thursday evening. It's a Thursday evening, as it has been for the last several years.
Like a primetime thing? It's not an all-day thing?
It's in the evening on Thursday. Then it resumes Friday evening.
Think anybody will show
up? And then it is Saturday about 11 to 7.
You think anybody will show up in Kansas City?
Yeah, I do. They're not distracted by baseball. I mean, the Royals are the Royals.
People love the Royals out there.
Well, they do, but I would say it's a football-first city, wouldn't you? They like college basketball.
I would say, well, because of the current situation, yeah, these days it is a football city, but it's a baseball town, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have guessed
Royals
that.
Are big, yeah. The people from my generation, a little older,
Royals.
Geriatric.
It's all about the Royals, about the George Royals, Brett, yeah, and all yeah. that.
Because the Chiefs were mediocre for too many decades.
Well, that's fair. Okay. Yeah, I think they'll have a turnout. I mean, especially fresh off the Super Bowl title.
I was being sarcastic.
Oh.
But yes, there'll be a huge turnout. Have you seen they're having it at the train station?
The Union Station
downtown in Kansas City.
We drove past
over the hill from what do they call that place? Westport, I think is what they call it.
We drove right past Union Station on the way to the hotel last year.
In week five,
I think it was, when the Bills beat them 24-20. We drove right past that train station. It's an unmistakable, building. Like, even if you're not from Kansas City, if you drive past, you're like, oh, that's got to be Union Station. It stands out.
It's great architecture.
Yeah. So that is where it will be 3 weeks from today. It's coming up fast. Steve and I are like grinding on the tape right now. We're way behind Greg Cosell, who's spending days and nights grinding through 330-some-odd prospects. So we're trying to play a mad case of catch-up, and I don't know how much success we're having, but we're getting there slowly but surely. I just finished the defensive tackles yesterday.
We're chiming into each other saying, "What'd you see? What about this guy? What about that guy?" And,
yeah.
and we're both watching game film and highlights and all of that, and making snap judgments on the future of these young men that we've never met.
To some degree, we're asked to have an opinion, so
we do.
I'm going to make sure I have one.
And my opinions are based off of a couple of minutes of watching them.
Hey, whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes.
At least I'm watching them. It's fun, though, because I remember, no matter how old you get, you remember what it was like. And it's really an exciting time in the sport. Forget about this draft day in the NFL. For the sport of football, NFL draft day is big.
I would argue
big.
And you tell me what you think about this. I would argue that the NFL draft is the best reality television you could come up with. There's no soap opera that even comes close to this, and that's all scripted. And think about reality television as a genre. Even some of that is contrived.
I'll say this. It's almost, I think it might be in some ways, maybe not as good as Hard Knocks, because I know what goes into Hard Knocks.
Okay.
None of that's scripted in the team. And you do get a distilled bit of the information, the stuff that they shoot on Hard Knocks, because the teams have final say on what you can show on the program.
I think this is why the draft is even better than that.
There is nothing off limits in the draft.
I know that. I think this is my argument for why the NFL draft is even better than Hard Knocks. I think it's better because it is the plans of 32 teams coming together at one intersection on the same three nights in a row.
And all fan
And they
bases.
All have to work with each other
at
times to execute their master plan, quote unquote.
I think the fun part of it is it's reality TV, but done in front of a studio audience. I mean, you get instant feedback because every team is like Buffalo. Every team is, we're like every other 32 teams. They've all got their in-house media people. And they are all, like, when they pick, I mean, it's just as big a deal for these other teams that pick, you know, 20 through 32 mm-hmm. as it is for the Bills picking 27. They got people, like, they're just like us. They're talking about it all day, every day. And maybe not on the air like you and I do. But, man, when you go to that, like, oh, the Arizona Cardinals, the first round pick, whatever, you got people right there that are have been wanting. They're like, no! No! Or they're going, yep, that's just the way we thought.
When the Eagles picked Donovan McNabb and not Ricky Williams.
Oh, well, yeah. And it's like when the Patriots picked Cole Strange. Even other coaches and GMs were like going, Sean McVay busted into laughter.
Wow, really?
Really?
We had him down at 101 where we picked first.
Right. So you get that is a great aspect of the NFL draft that nothing else in reality TV can match because the results are going to be evident. There's no hiding it. You can't like just go off into obscurity. You're going to be on the air for 3 hours on Sunday afternoon,
yeah.
And the guy you just picked had better be out there jumping through hoops for you.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you look like a dope. So it's yeah. It is kind of good reality TV because it's ongoing, man. It never stops. And these are the, you know, we're getting introduced to the new cast of characters. You know, that
yep.
Some of them may be with us for a couple of decades as they head in the Hall of Fame. That kind of stuff, you know, think about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, some of these guys are going to become part of a city's vernacular. They're like
household names?
Yeah. And you're going to find out who they are. It's pretty cool because of the magnitude of the game, you know, because of the league.
That helps.
It's unbelievable how big this, you know, 800-pound gorilla is. So you get some of that, but it's a big ditty. You're right. It is really good reality TV.
And it is, in case you had not heard yet, Steve and I are off tomorrow for Good Friday and Easter weekend. So there will be no One Bills Live tomorrow. So with that in mind, we have moved up our OBL fan mailbag to today. So if you have any questions on the draft, maybe a draft prospect, the Bills picks and what they might do, some question about the league, maybe a rule change that's coming down the pike for the fall, whatever the case might be, you have a question, Steve and I will try to give you a quality answer. And you can give us a call at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Any and all questions, we take all of them. So fire them off if you've got them. We're going to get to the mailbag today since we will not be here tomorrow. And another reminder, if you really need to hear from Steve and myself tomorrow, we have a way for you to fill the void. You can go to our podcast, which is called Bills by the Numbers. During the season, it's every week. Off-season, it's bi-weekly, but there is a new episode up this week, which we think you'll find very interesting. They're presented by FanDuel, and it's called Bills by the Numbers. You can go on the Bills YouTube channel and find it. You can go on any podcast platform you use, and you can find it. Just type in Bills by the Numbers. Boom, there we are. And we take a little bit more of a statistical slant on things. It's not over the top, but we present some numbers that are often very interesting as they pertain directly to the Bills. And this week's episode deals with draft value from a surplus perspective by position. It's pretty interesting. So if you need your fix tomorrow, when we don't have One Bills Live, you can listen to Bills by the Numbers tomorrow at your leisure on any of your podcast platforms. And subscribe so you know when the next episode is up. But in the meantime, we're taking your questions in the OBL Fan Friday mailbag. So send those in or call, and we'll be happy to answer those. In the meantime, we go around the NFL, which is presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And there is yet again, Steve, some AFC East news. It has been all week long. This time, Tyreek Hill drops the bomb. Appearing on a podcast this week, he said that his plans were to play up to 10 seasons in the NFL and then call it quits, which would be after, according to him, his current contract is up following the 2025 season, which means he would play three more seasons and then call it a career. So he already, he basically laid that out. This is a five-time All-Pro player. He's already won a Super Bowl, which he did with the Chiefs back in 2019. Been voted to the Pro Bowl each of the 7 years he's been in the league. So he's looking to do different business ventures after his playing career is over, Steve.
Good luck.
I think it would have to be some kind of express delivery service. Wouldn't he be perfect for that?
That's a good point.
You know, being a fast guy?
Yeah, yeah. I get it.
The cheetah, you know, cheetah delivery, something
right.
like that.
Something like that, yeah. Buy some trucks and make shipments or something,
yeah, there you
or
go.
Whatever.
And then you just, you know, you just use yourself as your own spokesperson. That could
work.
That would be my marketing recommendation to him.
What else? You know, well, who knows? Whatever he wants, I guess.
Sure.
With that contract.
Well, I mean, he's making $30 million a year here for the last 4 years of his career, so he could do a lot worse than that.
Yep.
Just invest it properly.
And so he's going to be gone after the 25 season?
Correct, which will be his age 31 season, where I think even he is smart enough to realize he's probably not going to be quite the cheetah he was.
Still pretty fast. Last time I saw him,
yeah,
the guy can.
Well, now he is. Now he's only 28, but.
And it's not even, that, you know, he's that fast. Because we had a lot of fast guys in the league. But the thing is about Tyreek, and he's explosive. The guy can change direction and accelerate faster than anybody else from a standing start. That's why he can get out ahead of these guys. And then when he gets out ahead of them, he also outruns them as well. But, man, oh, man, you got to admit it. Whether you like the guy or not, whether he's on your team or not, the guy's special.
Right.
The guy's a special athlete, and he's making the most of it. And I, if he can actually pull it off and just say, I'm, you know, like, just wipe his hands, say, I'm done, and walk away and stay away, man, bless his heart, because that's hard to do. That's hard to do, particularly.
At age 31.
Well, yeah, but particularly. I mean, I didn't stop till I was 35.
That's what I'm saying.
At 31, he's still going to feel pretty good. And
you would think.
And think about it, too. What if he's playing good? What if he's still playing well?
Yeah. Look, I'm not taking this comment to the bank by any means. I just thought it was interesting.
Right.
He'll probably change his mind 10 times between now
and then. I'll say this, too. It does say something about what he's accomplished. So, you know, there's nothing else out there for him. He's got a huge contract, and he's won a Super Bowl.
And he's made the Pro Bowl every year and been All-Pro five times.
Right. What is there left for him?
I mean, other than looking at receiver records, I don't know. He's led the league in receiving yards. Just did that. So did he lose that to Justin Jefferson?
Justin Jefferson, I think, was
finished second.
Now that you mention it. But still, it really gets – it'll be interesting to see. You know, and you always kind of, like, throw darts at it and, you know, kind of criticize or whatever his statement was. We kind of scrutinize it, I guess, is the best word. I wonder if he's going to take it out of gear. You know? Because it sounds kind of like he's thinking about it already.
Well, it's like your former coach used to say, if you're thinking about retirement, you're already retired.
Yeah.
That'll be something to keep an eye on.
Because
he's already got it in his head as to what,
like,
the clock ticking down.
I can see the end of this. And let's face it, whose life's better than his right now? Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Right? So it'll be interesting to see if he comes out with the same fire that we've seen from him.
Yeah. Interesting nonetheless. Three more seasons with Tyreek Hill. Quarterback news concerning the draft, Steve. Tennessee quarterback Hendon Hooker scheduled to meet with the Buccaneers on a pre-draft 30 visit. He's been making rounds with a lot of the quarterback needy teams. He's met with the Saints. He's met with the Commanders and the Titans. So the Bucs are the latest team to bring him in for a pre-draft visit. Each team gets 30 of those. Basically, the Bucs have Baker Mayfield on a one-year deal. Backup Kyle Trask is still on his rookie contract. So to say there's a long-term answer at the position would be foolhardy. So you can understand their interest. They have the 19th pick in the draft, Steve. So basically you have Tampa at 19. The other teams that have had him in for a visit, Washington, who picks 16th, Tennessee, who picks 11th, and New Orleans, who picks 29th. There is growing sentiment that Hendon Hooker is going to find his way into the first round. And if he does, if you're a Bills fan, you're hoping he goes in front of the Bills to push more talent
right
down to Buffalo.
Yeah, that's the short-term win. But the thing about Hendon Hooker is, if people aren't familiar with him, he's the Tennessee Volunteers quarterback this last year. He got an ACL injury.
In November.
He's not going to be ready to play until halfway through the NFL season if he's on schedule and can get back to it. The thought, though, is before he got hurt, he was a very good player. Now, certainly you can poke holes in his game, but that guy can really play, and he is a really top prospect. In my mind, I watched the guy play, and I liked him. I think he's a really good player, and he's got a high ceiling, I think. The injury throws a wrench into where you think you're going to draft him, though. He's not going to be a top five pick because he's not going to be available for his first year. But if you've got a guy like a Ryan Tannehill, like Tennessee, who you can scooch through one more year and then have Hendon Hooker come in and get active later in the season, maybe get a late season start if you're in it or out of it, or if a meaningless game comes up late, you get him on the field, and then you spend the entire offseason acclimating him on a rookie contract. Then he comes in his second year, much like Pat Mahomes did, and he's off and running because he'll be 100% healthy. Teams like that, like the Saints, although they've got Derek Carr, same kind of thing, though. They're not married to him.
And the Bucs have Baker Mayfield on a one-year deal.
Yeah, and Hendon Hooker might be able to beat Baker Mayfield out with a cast on his leg.
Here's the interesting thing as it pertains to Hooker specifically.
No, Washington Commanders, same thing. Go ahead.
Here's the interesting thing as it pertains to Hooker specifically. You have the four quarterbacks in front of him, Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis, Richardson.
Right.
Okay. Hooker is the end of the tier. There is a precipitous drop-off after Hooker to, the third round. Middle, late third round is where they have, the next quarterback, that Jake Haener kid who was at the Senior Bowl. That's a precipitous drop-off. So if you are a quarterback-needy team, and those four are off the board already, which many anticipate will all be off the board before you're out of the top 10, there's going to be some jockeying for position to go get Hendon Hooker if they think he is the bottom of Tier 1. Most believe he is. And who knows, he might have been even higher in Tier 1 had he not had the ACL injury. So he's the last guy left. And you're a quarterback-needy team, watch what some of these teams do to go get him, Steve.
They might get him because they get a five-year deal if you can get him in the first round. If you get him 31st or whatever, you jump up, you get him, you get an extra year on the deal. And if he turns out to be the best guy ever, you got him tied up for 7 years.
Yeah.
So even if he doesn't want to play for you. So that's, that's what the Baltimore Ravens are doing with Lamar. So you really do kind of want to grab him in the first round if you can. But like I said, he's not ready. So it's kind of takes the – even if you take him high or a little too high, it takes the pressure off getting him on the field because he can't play because of his injury, which is a perfect built-in excuse for the kid to sit and watch and learn, and you find out about him and you get him ready and you work on him and the whole thing. And he comes out and has a much better chance of success in year two when he can take a full off season, be a pro athlete, and show up ready to play. He's got a better chance to succeed. And it's great on a lot of levels for teams because we've seen all the worst-case scenarios over the course of the years. Mm-hmm. A guy coming in, and all, because they draft him high, you got to play him, and he's not ready, and the team stinks around him because that's why you were drafting high, and he never recovers.
Yeah, I just – the more I look at this, the more I believe Hooker is going to go in front of the Bills at 27, which is good because, again, it pushes more talent down. Like, if Will Levis is still on the board and you get to Tennessee at 11, and let's just say hypothetically Tennessee passes on him at 11, well, now he could slide all the way down to Washington at 16, Tampa Bay at 19.
Houston could take him.
You know?
I mean, if they
And then in that particular case, maybe he does last until New Orleans at 29. But if Will Levis goes somewhere in the top 10, 11 picks, it's on. And teams like Washington, Tampa, and New Orleans are going to be hot after him, and somebody's going to make a move to go get him, to beat the other team to the punch is what I mean. Because there's not enough supply and too much demand. So somebody's going to move up and take him earlier than I think a lot of us anticipated going.
And you want to throw a wrench or some real intrigue into it. What if it gets to the Baltimore Ravens who pick at 22 and they take him?
Yeah, that's right, because Ravens GM Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh yesterday met the media for their pre-draft luncheon, and a lot was made of, hey, no questions on Lamar, only draft questions. But a lot of what happens with Lamar impacts what they're going to do in the draft.
Yeah, no question.
And so DaCosta was asked, is quarterback a possibility in round one? And first he said, it depends on the board. But then he said, but yes, it's a possibility because we have quarterbacks in the top 31 players on our board.
Right.
Which isn't a surprise. I think a lot of people would expect Bryce Young and, you know, C.J. Stroud to be in anybody's top 31 on their draft board. So that's not shocking. But, yeah, you're right. Like, one of those top five guys slides to 23? Wouldn't be a bad idea.
No.
I mean, they obviously have a better sense as to how the whole Lamar thing is going to play out than we do, being 10,000 miles away from it. But if they have any shred of doubt that Lamar is ever going to play for them again?
Yeah.
Why not?
Start now. Start replacing him now.
They have other holes, granted.
And this Hendon Hooker scenario makes perfect sense because Lamar, Hooker's not going to be ready to play at all until November. So Lamar doesn't even have to feel threatened by anybody sitting there next to him until November or whatever, and then the season's off, and you got to handle on what's going to happen next. And that would also preclude their pressure on the Baltimore Ravens to do a deal at any cost with Lamar. So
let me ask you this. Let's just say the Ravens believe the chances of signing Lamar to an extension is 65-35 for it to happen. You feel in your heart of hearts your odds are 65-35 that you're going to get Lamar signed to an extension.
Right.
If you draft a quarterback, you ruin those percentages.
Right.
Some might argue it gives you more leverage. I would argue it would ruin any good faith negotiations you've been able to have with Lamar. So if you're 65-35, I think you avoid quarterback in round one. But if you're 50-50 on getting Lamar done on an extension, I'm pulling the trigger. Give me the young quarterback. Because I'm not going to get caught with my pants down here.
Right, that's right. I'll say this. I don't know what Lamar is asking for. I don't know if anybody does.
Well, I think we all believe he's asking for a fully guaranteed contract.
Right. How big a contract? Because if he wants $5 million a year for 5 years, I'll guarantee all of that. You know what I'm saying? So there's a gray area in there, what they're willing to guarantee and what they're willing to pay for that guarantee.
I have to believe the floor for Lamar is 230.
Right. It's got to be like Deshaun got. So if they're saying there's no way and he's not budging and he hasn't budged since day one and you haven't had any give and take, you're not going to move, that's how willing are you to not do that? And if you're completely not willing and he's convinced you he's not willing and you're at an impasse,
draft a quarterback.
Draft a quarterback.
You got to protect yourself.
Draft a quarterback.
Which would make me happy again because, you know.
Yeah, that would be five quarterbacks, which puts the Bills up at pick 22.
Yeah, conceivably, yes.
So – all of that, yeah. So it's intriguing because Baltimore has put them – now, I'll say this for the Ravens. It looks like they're in a bad spot because of Lamar and all that. They have played it exactly right, in my estimation. I'm not going to guarantee Lamar a contract.
He gets hurt too much.
And he can't – he doesn't throw – her passing offense isn't throw. And I'll tell you what, the passing offense not being as good as it could be is on Lamar. It's not on the wide receivers. It's not on Greg Roman. It's on Lamar. You can say what you want. It's on Lamar. Every other – the great quarterbacks elevate those guys. That's what they do. Everybody around them gets better. And if you can't throw the foot, it's on Lamar. Because I'll say what, Anderson, their tight end, had a really nice year last year. Why didn't the other guys? You know, you're saying they were never open. They didn't. He couldn't make those. No, it's on Lamar, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's on Lamar. And certainly, better players make you better. But they got 53 guys. They got a 53-man roster just like everybody else. They already made the entire switch of the organization over to Lamar's way of doing business.
All right, so let's think about this now. We already talked about how intriguing the draft is. You have the Lamar thing still sitting out there, and sometimes deadlines force people to move. And some people view the draft as a deadline as far as improving their roster is concerned. So could something unfold with Lamar? Certainly possible. And the latest report out of New York is that draft weekend, at the earliest, is the current target for an Aaron Rodgers trade to the Jets. They're pushing this all the way
past the draft
to the draft as the earliest point in time. Could happen after the draft. Personally, I think if it goes after the draft, I think Green Bay is going to be asking for more, not less, because they've missed out on improving their roster with additional draft capital from the Jets. If you don't get this done before the draft and give the Packers whatever draft capital they were looking for, well, now the Packers are asking for more, I think, because they can't help themselves now with draft picks.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, sure it does. I don't know, and certainly the only leverage the Green Bay Packers have over the Jets is the fact that the Jets don't have a quarterback, and that they got to get rid of Aaron before they pay him $57 million in cash.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the leverage they have. You think Aaron Rodgers is seriously going to go back and start practicing with the Green Bay Packers at all? He's not going to. They got to move him. Now, what the Jets are, the only leverage the Jets have, they don't have any leverage, none at all. They got to wait. But the problem is it's costing them Aaron Rodgers getting acclimated into their offense, into this, into that, and the other. Albeit it's the same offense.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it, he can't throw with those guys. He could on his off time, I guess, as just an independent workout. Let's go out in California and get together with his receivers. That kind of thing. I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, that's what the Jets are losing out all this, the fact that
right.
He can't get in the building and get ready to be a Jet.
Right. Elsewhere in the AFC East,
there's more.
Oh, there's more. The New England Patriots will be hosting Boston College wide receiver Zay Flowers on a pre-draft visit. New England has the number 14 pick in the draft. If they take him at 14, that's going to start a run pretty early on the receiver class, maybe even a little earlier than I had hoped. Because to me, there's probably only three or four receivers, at least, and this is just me talking, that I could see going in round one. So,
I don't know. Maybe.
Start that run at 14. I don't think there's going to be anything left by 27 is what I'm getting at there.
One of the two, yes, you're right. The two guys that are a little bit of wild cards there, if you think there's only four guys, it's like you're talking about Zay Flowers, Addison, Njigba, and who?
Probably Quentin Johnston. Maybe Jalen Hyatt.
Jalen Hyatt. See, there you go. That right there is like five guys.
Yeah, I don't think – I don't know why. I just don't think Hyatt makes it.
Then you've got guys like, you know, Cedric Tillman, Tank Dell, and Josh Downs after that, you know.
Don't forget our guy, Jonathan Mingo.
Jonathan Mingo. There you go. Yeah, so there's a bunch of guys that could get taken in that, but to me, we've been talking about this for weeks. They're all the same guy, except for a few of them.
Right. Meanwhile, the Patriots, according to reports in The Athletic, have quietly shown interest in adding another blue chip back to their roster. They already have a workhorse in Ramondre Stevenson. They did lose Damian Harris to the Bills in free agency. But there is talk that the Patriots are showing a keen interest in Bijan Robinson if and when they are on the clock with the 14th pick. Look, I'll be the first to tell you that you need to support a quarterback like Mac Jones, who at this point we don't even know if he's going to be there. I mean, that guy could get moved on draft weekend too, based on all the reports we're hearing out of there about the falling out between him and Belichick. So I can understand wanting to get a dynamic back to support a quarterback with deficiencies. And this guy is supposed to be special. But I don't know. And maybe you go at it with a two-headed monster.
You're telling me Bijan Robinson is going to be, like, what, better than Saquon?
I think he's not far off of what Saquon does. He's not as big. He's impressive. I'm not going to deny that. I just don't know how. I don't know how he makes New England demonstrably better, because they have so many other areas that have to be addressed. And you could argue they're okay at running back with Ramondre Stevenson.
Right.
To me, it's almost like a luxury pick. Do you upgrade the running back room with him in it? Yes. I mean, Ramondre Stevenson does not have the athletic skill set that Bijan Robinson does. It would be an improvement, but I think there's so many other places for the Patriots to improve. To me, it doesn't make sense. That's just where I'm coming from. The other running back they are supposedly considering is Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama, who in many cases hasn't even been mocked in the first round. You could arguably get him in round two. Now, you want to do that? I'll listen to that. But using your top pick at 14 on a running back, I don't know.
Yeah, they did it last year with a offensive guard that was projected as a third rounder.
Yeah.
I mean, they've made some.
Do they know what they're doing? Because when it comes to the draft, they seem pretty inept.
Yeah, they've made some really poor picks. Really poor picks.
We have to get to break here, but before we do, one last note around the NFL. Penn State cornerback Joey Porter Jr. is on a visit with the Ravens today. Reminder, the Ravens pick 23rd in round one. We take a break here. Reminder, OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open a day early because Steve and I are off for Good Friday. So if you have any questions, fire them off on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live or give us a call, 803-0550. Back in a moment here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live here on a Thursday. And Ian Rappaport just had an interesting report, Steve. He's been reporting heavily on the pre-draft 30 visits for NFL draft prospects who are zooming around the country, meeting with teams this late in the game, which is kind of commonplace. And he just reported that one of your favorite players in the draft, Steve, Tennessee right tackle Darnell Wright, is on a top 30 visit with the Packers today, spent time with the Bears yesterday, and his next stop is the Bills, on a tour that apparently includes 20 NFL teams. I think it's safe to say this guy will be off the board night one of the draft.
Yeah, that means with all those visits, I don't know if he's going to make it down to 27 where the Bills are.
It's not looking good.
He was my, he's my crush that we had during the week. We had, who's the guy you think the Bills can take and who you want them to take, that kind of thing. And he's the guy I picked. I picked too high. He's not going to be there.
Might not be.
Golly darn it.
So, yeah, he's making the rounds. So, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, he will be here. And we're assuming that'll be tomorrow if he's got this whirlwind tour and he's in Green Bay today.
Well, let's say it's tomorrow because it's not going to be
– Well, it's not going to be Easter weekend.
Yeah, right. So,
you know. So.
There you go. Well, there you go.
But that's nice. Cool. That's cool. I like that.
We're not even working tomorrow, so I'm not even going to get a chance to meet my guy.
Yeah. If, in fact, he's here. So,
not like he's going to want to meet me, but still, could at least stick his head in the door and say hi.
Yeah.
I picked him.
That's right. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you want to get on board with an OBL fan mailbag question. And we'll get to the phones in just a second as the lines are populating, but there is an open line for you there. In the meantime, we go to the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, for the Friday mailbag. Question one comes from Andrew, and he asks, with Sean McDermott taking on the defensive play calls, has he put himself on the hot seat if this season doesn't pan out like it should? I know the whole team falls on his shoulders at the end of the day, but with this move, he can't blame anyone but himself now.
I don't think it adds any more pressure to him. In fact, it may take it off if the defense plays well, which there's no reason to think it shouldn't. I mean, Tremaine Edmonds notwithstanding, if the defense plays well and the team, you know, does what it did last year or 2 years ago or whatever, if they're as good as they've been under him, there's no reason to think he's under any more pressure because he's calling the defense than anybody else. Now, if the defense comes out and it's 28th in the league with the same cast of characters and no real drop-off in talent, he might be able to say, listen, I can't do both. And then you'll have either Leslie Frazier come back or whatever. They'll do something else. He'll say, I can't do both, and it becomes obvious. So, and that's an easy out for him rather than an excuse to let him go. So I don't think so. I don't think him calling the defensive signals does anything to make it more likely or less likely that he's going to get fired or let go or the team does better or worse. I mean, we still have to wait and see how they play. But, I don't think it has anything to do with his head coaching tenure, in my opinion.
Right. I don't think so either. They're one of five teams that won 13 games or more last year. And I understand last year is last year, but as Steve said, I don't think there's any reason to believe that the defense is going to fall off a cliff this year. And I think Sean McDermott feels confident that with his play calling, the defense might even be more effective than it has been.
And let's face it, with the naked eye, I mean, all of us, the Bills fans and everything, the Bills defense statistically was awesome. But with the only concerns you'd have or criticisms Bills fans that I've heard had was they didn't make enough plays. Now, they did make a few more last year than they did 2 years ago, but you know what I'm saying? Like, not enough turnovers, not enough sacks. You know, it wasn't a dynamic playmaking defense.
Splash plays.
Right. There weren't enough splash plays. They kept the other team stifled. You know, once in a while, they went through a stretch last year where it seemed like if it was third and 11, they couldn't help but give up a first down, that kind of thing, you know, where it was pretty frustrating. But they were, you know, they were winning games. They went through an eight-game winning streak last year. I mean, good grief. They were tough out. So if you're going to criticize them, you know, maybe the defense could be ranked lower this coming year than it was a year ago, but we might think it's a better defense because it shows up
right
when it needs to show up. You know what I'm saying? That would go a long way, I think, towards making people have a perception of it being actually a better defense with Sean McDermott than with Leslie Frazier, because every once in a while he does something or he'll get the credit for a play being made, you know, that we don't remember them being able to make under Leslie Frazier. That's the only criticism I've heard of the defense, and the only one I could think of is maybe they make more splash plays than they did under Leslie with Sean McDermott.
Let's go to the phones to see what questions lie there, and we lead off with Gordon in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Gordon?
Okay, do you think Miami or New England's going to give Buffalo a run for the money?
In the division?
Yes.
I'm not worried about New England. I think Miami is a legitimate threat, provided Tua stays healthy. And that's a big question mark as I see it. But New England, no, I am not worried about that team at all. They are a distant fourth from the rest of the division. They just don't have the horses.
I think if the deal with Aaron Rodgers comes through and the Jets get him, that's the team I worry about.
Yeah.
Miami, too. Now, I think Miami has closed. They're close. I mean, they're good. They're a good football team. When they're healthy and Tua is clicking, they're really good. New York Jets, Aaron Rodgers changes things for that franchise. All of a sudden, the Jets become a team that believes, and that's really dangerous. New England, I don't know what to tell you. I think the roof's caving in over there. The way they drafted last year, now they still, you know, put it together. They won 8 games this last year with Mac. Their offense was an absolute atrocity, but their defense has remained solid. So, I think the Jets in Miami, yeah, they could. They're going to think they can beat the Bills in the division. They're thinking they can give the Bills a run for their money. But I still think the guys here in Buffalo are the best team in the division. They have to play like it against those teams, but I think that's where I'm at.
Yeah,
they're still the cream of the crop in the division.
Speaking of the Jets, we'll have
but
more
the gap
on
is
them.
Narrowed.
Speaking of the Jets, we'll have more on them in hour number 2 of the show when we have our good friend Ligier Duzable, Jets analyst, joining us in hour number 2 of the show. We'll get the latest on the Aaron Rodgers situation. The Jets just signed a quarterback. It's a backup, Tim Doyle, who played with Rodgers in Green Bay. So people continue to connect the dots there. But we'll catch up with Ligier in the second hour of the show. More of your phone calls and tweets next, though, here on an OBL Fan Thursday mailbag. One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, OBL Fan Thursday mailbag, since Steve and I are off for the Good Friday holiday tomorrow. And Jess asks, what are the odds the Bills trade up in round 1? I think we've all seen that Brandon Bean is not shy about being aggressive if he believes it makes sense for improving his roster. He did it just last year, going up a couple of spots to take Kyir Elam because – in his estimation, the board that he has in his draft room was saying, we're running out of round 1 prospects here, especially at cornerback. So if you want one, you're going to have to make a move to ensure you get one. And he moved up 2 spots, what was it, 23 to 21, to get Kyir Elam out of Florida. He's done it for Tremaine Edmonds in round 1. He did it for Josh Allen, trading up twice in round 1. So it's happened before. Very easily could happen again. I think much like last year, it would be a small move. We're not talking about a big right. leap up the board. Something like 2 to 4 spots tops.
Right.
As I
20,
see
we're at 27. The Bill, Minnesota's at 23. Jacksonville's at 24. The Giants are at 25. Minnesota at 23 and the Giants at 25 both need corners. And that to me, if both those teams need a corner and the Bills are trying to move up, there's a lot of corners in this draft. Last year, there were 9 defensive backs taken in the first round. The Bills could make that happen, move up a couple of spots all the way to 23 to Minnesota. If Minnesota, now Jacksonville's at 24, they need a defensive end, a defensive tackle, and a corner. It will be how the board falls to those guys at that point. Now, if all the D tackles and defensive ends are gone, they could go corner because Jacksonville needs one too. I think that's the key. What is there a run on those positions that would allow the Bills to say, listen, we want to jump up and take this offensive tackle? Jacksonville sitting there at 24 or Minnesota's at 23 saying, well, we don't need a tackle. And if we go to 27, we got enough guys that we could throw in a 4th rounder with this pick. You throw in a 4th rounder, Buffalo, we'll give you this pick, we'll take your 27th pick, we'll get an extra pick, and we'll still get the tackle or the corner that we like because you're not taking him. Mm-hmm. You're taking a tackle.
We think.
We think. Let's do it. Well, the Bills would tell him. You know,
no,
tell
I don't think he would. The way Brandon usually puts it is he says, you know, our guy. If our guy is there.
Right.
You know, that kind of, I don't know if they give away positions too much.
That's right. But or they could say, I don't know.
We're probably not looking for what you're looking for.
Yes, we're not looking for that. We're looking for a big guy.
Well, I don't think he says that.
Well,
I think
whatever.
He says, I don't think we're looking for what you're looking for. So you don't have to worry
right.
about taking what I think you're going to be taking.
So that, however the conversation goes, that's what would happen. And that's about as, to me, and I don't know if you agree with this, Brownie, that's as far as I see him jumping. If they're going to trade,
it's a small jump.
They're not going
they
up.
Make one
they're
of
not
them.
Going up to 15 even. Forget about getting
they're not
in the
going
top
up to 20.
10. Yeah, they're right. It's really expensive to do it in the first round, and I think you're looking at a 25, 24, 23 jump.
Two
right
to four
there.
Spots.
Two to four spots. That's it. But it could happen.
Yep.
It could happen if there's a guy there and we don't know. I don't know if there is. If there's a guy there that they want and they think the Giants or the Cowboys at 26 are going to get him or one of these other teams, they'll jump. They'll do it. I don't know how likely that is, though. It's impossible to say.
Ed out of the mailbag asks, how many players did the Bills draft this year, or do they use some of the current picks in deals? Well, I mean, that's hard to answer, too, because not even the Bills know how the board's going to unfold and – an opportunity like the one we were just describing may present itself, and now you give up a four. Now you have only five picks instead of six. The Bills do not have a seventh. They have a pick in every other round. The only one they have that was not originally theirs is their fifth-round pick, which they got from Arizona in the Cody Ford trade, where they pick like third or second in the round. So that one's considerably higher than where they pick in the other rounds. Otherwise, it's one through six, no seven. So if they make a trade like Steve was just outlining, they're down to five picks. But it's hard to predict whether they'll keep all of them or not.
At this point, it's still, I think, the best guess would be they're going to get their six picks, and that's what they're going to walk away with.
They do need cheap labor.
Yes. If they do, I don't know what they would trade. Maybe they trade a pick next year for an extra one this year, maybe, late in the draft. Like they get two fives or two sixes. But I think right now, the way the board said, you have to say the best odds are that they're going to sit right where they're at, because you start getting at all the moving parts that are unpredictable. If you're going to trade, you got to have a partner, and that's impossible to say. So the best odds are that they're going to stand pat.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen it happen too much that something happens.
Brandon isn't shy about moving around
right.
the board.
Right.
For the right people. All right, we're going to take a break here because in hour number two, joining us will be CBS Sports studio analyst covering the Jets, former Jet, former Bill, LeJay Duzable will be joining us for hour number two. He's going to give us the latest on the Jets, what the heck is going on with the Rodgers situation, and some other moves that the Jets might be contemplating. OBJ. We'll get to all of that with LeJay Duzable next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hour number two on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show. Happy to have with us now CBS Sports Studio Analyst and SiriusXM NFL radio host, covers the Jets, played for the Jets, played for the Bills, hosted teams, played 10 seasons in the NFL. It's one LeJay Duzable joining us to talk Jets, who are, I don't know, in a holding pattern, still, on the whole Aaron Rodgers thing. LeJay, how you doing, first of all? And then second of all, what do you believe is the primary holdup in all of the Rodgers stuff?
Hey, Chris and Steve, it's always great to be on, you know, here with you guys and talk a little football. To me, the biggest holdup is compensation. It's been the biggest holdup for, I would say, the better part of almost 2 months now, right? It's what is Green Bay willing to, you know, take or receive from the New York Jets for the services of Aaron Rodgers? And then also, adversely, what is Joe Douglas, the GM for the Jets, willing to give up? And we've heard rumors to potentially be a second-round pick this year, a second-round pick next year, depending on, you know, escalators in Aaron Rodgers' contract, could potentially be a first next year. But then the Jets also want some protection as well, because we know, we followed Aaron Rodgers the last few years. He's been on the brink of retiring for the last two or three seasons. So if you're Joe Douglas in the Jets, you want some protection just in case he does retire and doesn't play in 24 to recoup, you know, some compensation back, whether it be if it's a second round pick, then you get a third round pick if he decides not to play. So Chris and Steve, to me, that's the biggest holdup right now. I think the Jets have been in uniform since day one, saying they're willing to take their time in this. Aaron Rodgers knows the system, and you guys know it. It's a little different than it used to be in off seasons in the past, right? Guys leave the offseason program all the time and go work out with their quarterback, even during OTAs. So it could be a scenario if this thing does drag out, say, till the draft, where Garrett Wilson, Alan Lazard, you know, Tyler Conklin, they get with Aaron Rodgers in California or somewhere outside of Jersey, and they continue to work the playbook, even though Aaron Rodgers isn't technically on the roster.
Yeah, let's take it for granted for a minute that this is going to happen whenever it does happen, whether it's after the draft or pre-camp or whatever. We believe it's going to happen. Give us a percentage of what a difference Aaron Rodgers is going to make for a Jet roster. I mean, is it going to be, you know, 20% better, 50% better? I mean, what's this going to mean to that? Certainly, hope walks in the door with him.
Yeah, you said it right there, Steve. Hope, right? Knowing now that you have a, you know, back-to-back MVP coming in there into the locker room. And even in a down year, right, in a down year, he threw for almost 3,700 yards. The Jets haven't had that in forever. So imagine you got a top-five defense who is always on the field. It takes a little bit of pressure off of them, Chris and Steve. Now you know you have a quarterback, a viable option at quarterback, that you may, you know, see a downtick instead of being on the field 60% of the time. Maybe you're only on the field 45, 50% of the time, which means you're fresh in the fourth quarter. This was a top five defense, and they had really no help at the quarterback position last year, so they were on the field a lot. So it doesn't just help the offense as far as, you know, some of the woes the Jets have had on offense. I think they average right under 18 points a game. But on defense now, because you'll be a lot fresher, those pass rushers will be able to get after teams late in the fourth quarter.
Let's spin it to the draft now, Legere, because all of that is getting overshadowed by all of this Rodgers stuff. And the Jets have pick 13. They also have two picks in round two. They signed some interior offensive linemen in free agency. They lost Sheldon Rankins to Houston. So there have been some comings and goings here. Is it too easy to say they're going to take a swing at offensive tackle again at 13? Because the line, even though they've invested heavily there in recent years in the draft, you can make the argument they should go right back to it again.
Oh, yeah, you can never have enough offensive linemen. And Joe Douglas likes to build his team the right way. And that's inside out. Front line guys first. Then he fills out the roster with everybody else. And if you just look at his drafts, that's what he does. And I think, Chris, you hit it on the head. 13, offensive tackle has to be on the top of everybody's mind at that position. No matter if Aaron Rodgers does come in there, if you don't have anybody to protect Aaron Rodgers, it's going to be a long day. He's significantly better when he's upright than when he's on his back. So, you know, Broderick Jones is a name that comes to mind. Paris Johnson, I believe, will be gone by the time that 13th spot comes around. Peter Skoronski is a name that also comes to mind. A lot of people think he'll transition better at the guard position. I think he could be a really good right tackle. And it all comes down, like you said, the Jets have invested heavily in the tackle position. But can guys stay healthy? Dwayne Brown is up in smoke, whether he'll come back for another year. Mekhi Becton has looked really good this offseason, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Promising tackle they took in the fourth round last year, Max Mitchell, will come back and be 100% healthy. And Elijah Vera Tucker is a guy I think that can be an all-pro guard, but has shown flexibility to step out and be an offensive tackle. So I think definitely the tackle position is something that the Jets will be looking at to really fortify that offensive line and protect Rodgers once that trade goes through.
All right, so protecting Aaron Rodgers. How much does this draft Does it move things along with Aaron Rodgers, these picks? And if something doesn't happen with Aaron Rodgers in this draft, how does that change the equation going forward? Because now you're talking about a 2024 draft and picks and compensation for the Packers and not this year's draft. Does this, you know, does the deadline of this draft and the Rodgers trade, how does that affect the negotiations for that happening?
Yeah, I think if you're Joe Douglas, you got to have two plans, right? Because if this thing drags out like you guys just talked about, Steve, then you have to have your eye on a prize and hoping that you're going to get Aaron Rodgers too. But you also got to move forward to get the best player available with those two picks that you talked about, Chris, in the second round. To me, if you're Green Bay, there's no way you let this get to pass the second day, right? You really want to evaluate Jordan Love. Why don't you get some compensation for Aaron Rodgers and put some pieces around him so you get a true evaluation of Jordan Love to see if he is your quarterback of the future? But if you're Joe Douglas and the staff, you got to have two plans. You got to have a plan if the trade happens pre-draft and if the trade happens after draft, and I'm sure they already have that done.
So once they get, let's just say, they go offensive tackle in round one. Now they got those two picks back-to-back. Is there any word out of there that, you know, they're high on somebody that they might package those two picks to move up the board, maybe even climb into the bottom of round one and go snag after they get the offensive tackle? I'm just curious how aggressive Joe Douglas might want to be or if he's just going to sit there and just go back to back.
We've seen Joe Douglas in the past be aggressive, right? With the Elijah Vera Tucker pick, they had two first-round picks, but they moved up in the first round and gave up a third to get Elijah Vera Tucker. We saw it last year with Breece Hall, right? They were trying to climb back into the first round and get Breece Hall, but they're able to get him early in day two. Chris, in this scenario, I don't see Joe Douglas being that aggressive just because if they do land that tackle at 13, now it gives you some leeway depending on if the Aaron Rodgers trade happens or not, where you can address the center position with a John Michael Smith maybe, or even the interior defensive tackle position. You talked about Sheldon Rankins leaving. I don't think people understand how big a loss that is for the New York Jets. When Quinnen Williams and Sheldon Rankins were in there, they were creating havoc in the interior of that defensive line. And it helped edge guys like Carl Lawson and Bryce Huff coming off the edge and Jermaine Johnson. So they got to address that as well. Guy I really like is Keanu Benton. We'll see if he lasts to the third. The thing is, the Jets don't have a third-round pick because they had to give that up to the Cleveland Browns in that trade for Elijah Moore. But could they potentially, with that second-round pick, maybe move back? We'll see. This is all, again, Chris, depending on what happens with Aaron Rodgers, because if that trade doesn't happen in day two, then they have those two picks back-to-back. I can see Joe Douglas moving one of those picks back or potentially picking a center and a defensive tackle back-to-back in the second round.
How do the signings in free agency, particularly at the skill positions, with Lazard, Mecole Hardman, how do these skill positions, plus with Breece Hall coming back, and obviously he's going to take a while to get back in his stride, but the skill positions around Aaron Rodgers when he gets there, what are those going to turn out to be? How do you think that's going to shape up?
Well, first and foremost, you love the Alan Lazard signing, a big body receiver that has familiarity with Aaron Rodgers, has 14 touchdowns in the last 2 years. The Jets really struggled, Steve and Chris, in the red zone scoring touchdowns. This is a big body receiver who can shield off DBs on slant routes and even on fade routes, go up and get the football. So that familiarity and him knowing the hand signals with Aaron Rodgers is going to be big in the red zone for the Jets. And then also being able to go down the field on 50-50 jump balls, which will open things up for Garrett Wilson coming across the middle. Mecole Hardman, you hope that he can stay healthy. He's one of the most explosive receivers in football when healthy. That has been his biggest issue. Can he stay healthy? So having that speed will also open things up for Garrett Wilson when he, you know, take those nine routes down the field, post routes down the field, open things up for Garrett Wilson. And also the tight ends, Tyler Conklin, CJ Uzomah, and a name to watch out for, Jeremy Rucker, was banged up last year. The Jets took him in the third round tight end. I really like him. He's an aggressive blocker, but also has a nice skill set as a pass catcher. So Aaron Rodgers is going to have more weapons than he had in Green Bay with the New York Jets with the signing of Lazard and Mecole Hardman. If they can really fortify that offensive line, the Jets could have something special.
What can be said about the pass rushing contingent, Leger? There's rumors out there that Carl Lawson could be a cap casualty. Obviously, he had the bad Achilles injury, never really got to do much in a Jets uniform. They tendered Bryce Huff, the restricted free agent, at a second-round tender level, and they got Jermaine Johnson waiting in the wings, the last of their three first-round picks last year. Could Carl Lawson get clipped before we get to the fall?
Nah, Chris, he's not going anywhere. I've talked to Carl exclusively. I've talked to Salah. Salah's already come out and said that he doesn't see a scenario where Carl Lawson is not on a roster. I mean, if you think about what he went through, Chris, and a lot of people don't know this, he had the Achilles injury, he had the surgery. He had to get another surgery after that because he got an infection and he had to do some work to it. So coming off of that, and I believe he had 7 or 8 sacks, that's a feat on its own. So you think 2 years removed from the Achilles, we'll get back to seeing Carl Lawson at his peak level. And even though last year was his high in sacks, he was still one of the best rushers off the edge as far as creating pressure and quarterback hits. And what Robert Saleh likes, he likes to have at least 4 or 5 defensive ends because he likes to rotate guys. He wants guys to go all out for 5 to 6 plays max, and he wants to rotate guys. So will Jermaine Johnson start this year? Probably not, because John Franklin Myers, a lot of people don't talk about it. He's an unsung hero on this defense, right? Probably the best edge guy as far as playing against the run, but it gives you that versatility to rush on the edge and rush inside. So, you know, Robert Saleh likes to have a whole bunch of defensive ends. Again, they have to address that defensive tackle position. John Franklin Myers can give you some snaps on passing downs, not on running downs, and so can Michael Clemens, who played really well as a fourth-round rookie, moving inside on third down and rushing. But they have to address that interior defensive line to keep that deep defensive line, because the way that defense is tailored is for the defensive line to create havoc, and then everything else is a lot easier for the linebackers and secondary.
So they signed Solomon Thomas. Is he a depth piece for them?
Yep.
Is he just – I mean, I don't know that he's going to be, you know, their top edge rusher, but is he just – is he on the roster going to make it just kind of take reps, or do they have more plans for him?
Yeah, last year he was the D-tackle number 4, right? He's more of a rotational guy, great for the locker room, plays extremely hard. And if you're Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, you wanted some familiarity in that room. Not only did you lose Sheldon Rankins, you lost Nathan Shepard, who was your number 3 D-tackle and actually started a few games when Sheldon Rankins was hurt. So getting I call him Saleh because I played with him in the 49ers, that's his nickname. Getting him back in the fold was big. He played really well down the stretch for the Jets, but he's going to be more of a rotational piece. I believe they either have to draft a starter next to Quinnen Williams, or there's a couple guys out there still, Al Woods, Puna Ford, that they could look at in free agency.
And then the Chuck Clark acquisition I thought was a shrewd move at safety. Got him from the Ravens for a 7th. I mean, that's a pretty good deal by Joe Douglas there. Does he just walk right into the starting lineup, or is he going to have some competition?
I think he'll have some competition. I think it's going to be between him and Whitehead. I think the Jets are still searching for another starting safety. But right now, I would have to say both of those guys are the starting safety. The good thing about Chuck Clark is he lined up in so many different positions. For the Baltimore Ravens last year, they had him at deep safety, had him in box safety, lined up at the nickel, lined up at dime linebacker. So he can do it all. And like you said, Chris, to get him for a 7th round pick, I call Joe Douglas the fleece king, because all his trades, somebody ends up getting fleeced and it's not him. I thought that was great value for a guy who has started the last 4 or 5 years for the Baltimore Ravens to bring him into the fold. Joe Douglas probably knows him exclusively from his time at Baltimore. So that was a really big trade and acquisition to get a starting caliber player for a 7th round pick.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Legere, thanks for being on with us, man. Appreciate you. Good luck this season. Hope we cross paths soon.
Definitely. Thanks, you guys, again.
All right. That's Legere Doosable, former NFL defensive lineman, played for the Bills, played for the Jets, and now working for CBS Sports. He's an analyst of the Jets down there.
He's an Emmy Award-winning NFL analyst.
Good for him.
Sports. Yeah, he is good. Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, we always try to get the info on the rest of the division. We have our go-to people. He's one of them. As far as the Jets are concerned, you hear he's texting with Carl Lawson. So I'm glad I asked that question because we got a first-hand answer. Because there were reports out there, Lawson could be a cap casualty, blah, blah, blah.
I think Carl Lawson's a really good
player. Well, he was a big free agent signing for them, and then he tore his Achilles in a joint scrimmage with the Packers.
They signed him from Cincinnati. Carl Lawson is one of those big, long guys. He's got a lot of length, and he plays with really great leverage, and which is why snapped his Achilles before he ever played a down for him, which was a crusher for them, no question. And then that's why I think, too, because of his big contract and the fact that he was injured, a lot of media people and outsiders are like, wow, well, they can't. He gave him no production. They paid him all that money. Well, not so fast. The guy can really play. So this coming is, like Legere said, his 2nd full year coming off the Achilles, Carl Lawson is going to be a problem for offenses. He's a real problem.
Right. And, to me, the Chuck Clark acquisition, that might have been one of the best trades I've seen all offseason. You're getting a veteran safety for a seventh-round pick. Like, Baltimore must have been looking to shed salary. That's the only thing I can think of as to why they'd move Chuck Clark off their roster. I mean, I know they have a first-round pick at safety that they got last year, the kid from Notre Dame, whose name's escaping me right now, the tall, thin kid that is probably going to move into their starting lineup anyway.
Right.
But I'd like to think you could do a little better than that. Seventh-round pick is all you get for Chuck Clark?
Sometimes you get into this and you can't see behind it because they don't want to. There are things going on that you can't see, either with the coach, with the players, with somebody that we don't know. All of a sudden, is jumping up into the front, in front of the guy that you think is a great player. The team sees it differently than everybody else. So we'll let me just see if I can. I'm with you. I'm finding that guy.
Kyle Hamilton.
There you go. That's it.
The kid out of Notre Dame.
That's right.
He's probably going to start for the Ravens anyway. So I understand why he was expendable for the Ravens. I just would have liked to think they could get more than a seven for him. But there it is. So, yeesh. I mean, and the Jets had a hole at safety, because they had some free agents.
You can get a starter for a seventh. Think about it. If you draft somebody in the seventh round, they end up a starter. It's huge.
It's a coup.
Right. So,
but LaMarcus Joyner, their veteran safety that they signed last offseason, was a free agent. His play was a little up and down. I'll take Chuck Clark over LaMarcus Joyner any day of the week. I mean, that's a good get for them. That kind of went under the radar. It's going to make that Jets defense even better than it was last year, which is saying something. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. OBL Fan Thursday mailbag edition, since Steve and I are off for Good Friday tomorrow. And we go back to the phones, and we go to Kevin in Hamburg. What do you got for us, Kevin?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, sure.
I wanted to call about today because I know today's your mailbag where you talk about more than just the Bills. I like Bijan Robinson because I follow Texas football, but I also agree that he'll probably not drop as far as the Bills because how good he is. But I would like to see him go to the Bears. I think at number 9, he could drop to the Bears and help out Justin Fields tremendously, even more than David Montgomery, because I think he helps out any Longhorn quarterback. And they have not had a phenomenal running back in years and years and years. They've had a lot of duds. And you imagine how good he would help out Justin Fields, because I think that's what Justin needs, is someone like him who's way better than what they got now. So I wanted to hear what you think about that.
All right,
I wanted
so,
to bring it up today because you're talking about more than just.
Yeah. No problem, Kevin. Bijan Robinson to the Bears at 9. Most people have them taking an offensive tackle. I've seen Peter Skoronski, the Northwestern kid who's right around the corner in Chicago there,
right,
to the Bears, and they do need offensive line help. I don't think there's any debate about that whatsoever. And they did let David Montgomery get away. He signed with Detroit in free agency, so he's not even there anymore. So I understand the hole that exists there at the running back position, but I just think they have way too many other things to address running back that early in the draft. They need offensive line help, as I mentioned.
They need both
D-line help.
Interior and tackle offensive line.
And they need probably a corner or two.
They don't have enough big bodies up front to win the line of scrimmage, and they need that. That's where
that'll help Justin Fields even more than a running back.
Yes, that'll help him more than anything. And then it's defensive tackle, edge rusher, cornerback, offense, all the money positions except quarterback. And they don't
and receiver.
And receiver. They need all of that. I've been going off on the Bears for a while. Their payroll was so lacking last year. They have to spend money this year to a certain level to pass the rules for spending the least, at least that they can.
To the floor.
To the cap floor. Forget the salary cap. The floor of the salary scale. They haven't reached it.
Well, they have now with everything they did in free agency. They signed Tremaine Edmonds to the giant contract, $17 million a year. They got DJ Moore in the trade to move out of the top spot with Carolina. So they have a number one receiver now. And then they signed TJ Edwards out of Philly, not for as much money as Tremaine Edmonds, but it was a three-year, $19.5 million contract. That's nothing to sneeze at. And in free agency, they signed Deonta Foreman, who did some great stuff in Carolina last year, late in the season, to a one-year, $3 million contract. So they'll probably start him in the backfield, try to beef up their offensive and defensive lines, and go from there. And even then, even if they hit home runs in the draft on the offensive and defensive line, they're still going to be fortunate if they can win seven or eight games.
Yeah.
They're a long way off. But Ryan Poles is only in his second year as GM of that franchise with Matt Eberflus as his head coach. It's going to be a slow burn to build that thing and build it the right way.
The Bears franchise has always been a master at lowering expectations to the point where if they even twitch in a positive way, the Chicago fans are ecstatic. The expectations are so low perennially in Chicago that whenever they can show a pulse, they get applauded for it. That's where they live. So that's why, you know, they don't win that division. They catch lightning in a bottle once in a while, and then they break the bottle to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Bears are right back, right in their wheel. They're right in their wheelhouse. They're rebuilding around a quarterback in a town where quarterbacks go to die.
Yeah.
So they woefully underspend. They make head-scratching trades, and they struggle. They don't build their team. They've never built their team the right way, at least not long enough to keep it sustainable.
Right.
So we'll see.
So that's basically kind of where it sits. With regard to, you know, the chances of Bijan Robinson going to the Bears at nine, I think it's very remote.
It should be extremely remote, but they'll probably do it
because they're the Bears.
Because they're the Bears. Okay. They're gonna think if they drafted Walter Payton this year, that would solve all of their problems. Give the fans some player, a single player at least, that they can cheer for, and not worry about whether they win or lose.
Let's go back to the fan mailbag, and Philip asks, is there a preferred veteran middle linebacker for Buffalo if they don't end up with a top-level prospect? Names like Deion Jones, Miles Jack, Quan Alexander, and Corey Littleton come to mind for me. I believe all of those are still out there on the free agent market. Deion Jones has been more of an outside backer than inside, if memory serves. Now, he did play middle linebacker for the Browns last year. I think I have that right. And has played inside in a 3-4, which is what he was doing in Atlanta his last year there. So I wouldn't mind Deion Jones. He's only 28 years old, still an athlete. So I would sign up for that. I know he was making some free agent visits here and there recently. So you could do a lot worse than Deion Jones. Miles Jack got released, so he's an option. He got released by the Steelers, so he was playing in a 3-4. So we'd have to check to see if the Bills would obviously have to check and see if they believe he's a fit. Quan Alexander, super athlete, little light in the pants, and a little older now. But beggars can't be choosers. You come out of the draft without a linebacker that you think is starting caliber right out of the chute as a rookie. This is the crop you're going to have to look at.
That's right. And it comes down to, obviously comes down to some money. But from what I'm looking at here, and I don't know if this is really current, I think it is. Is Lavonte David still out there?
No.
Yeah, okay.
I want to say he re-signed.
Yeah, I think
he signed somewhere.
These guys, some of the, it's, I'm not losing sleep over middle linebacker. I'm just not. I Brownie and I both like the top two inside linebackers. Mostly we like them because they're big enough to stand up to it. Drew Sanders, Jack Campbell, same names everybody else has got. After those two guys, it's a lot like this wide receiver class.
Well, everybody's probably even thinner.
Right. It's thinner, and it's a lot of undersized guys who are – you know, a little overachievers. Mm-hmm. These two guys, Campbell and Sanders, they've got a chance to be stand in there and be there for a decade. Everybody else is a little bit of a roll of the dice. And it's the same. You're going to get a guy like Miles Jack. While he's got some physical abilities, really fast guy, he bounces around because he's just not big enough to stand up to the run game.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a guy in there that can do that. You've got Milano in there. He's one of these guys. He's a 235-pound guy who can run and cover, but he's not really going to come up and stuff a guard and the running back in the hole. It's not what he's built to do. So that's where you're at. Once you get past those top two guys, give me any of those other guys.
Right. Corey Littleton, by the way, signed with Houston in free agency. So he is not available, in case you were wondering. So he is not one of the options still out there at this point in time. He's found a new home in Houston. We take a break here, but come back with more of your fan mailbag questions next at 803-0550 and on the tweet sheet. We'll see you in a second here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back. One Bills Live here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as always. And taking your questions as it is an OBL Fan Thursday mailbag. Steve and I off tomorrow for Good Friday. We'll be back again on Monday. A reminder, if you need your fix with a Bills show, you can check our podcast, Bills by the Numbers. New episode dropped yesterday, so be sure to check that out as it is draft intensive. We think you'll enjoy it. Go to any podcast platform, type in Bills by the Numbers, and you'll find us there. In the meantime, we go back to the phones and to Wendell in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Wendell? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, this is Wendell. I basically have a question for you, Chris. Well, you know, years ago, Buffalo made a blockbuster trade for Stephon Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
And on offense, I think we all can agree that it was a good move. Well, what do you think about Buffalo making a blockbuster trade on the defensive side of the ball, as for like a Myles Garrett? Do you think that would be a smart move, and do you think that something like that could happen?
I don't think it could happen because of the fiscal ramifications. Myles Garrett makes gigantic money, and okay, you already have a pass rusher making gigantic money in Von Miller on the roster now. So while anybody would sign up for it, I mean, Myles Garrett's one of the top three pass rushers in football right now, but the money just doesn't work. And unfortunately, that's why it's probably not a feasible option. I mean, this isn't fantasy football. I know people say the cap isn't real, but that can't happen. There's just no way to do it.
Well, plus, you're not going to get it done. Cleveland, you're going to have to talk them into it, and you're going to have to. And the price to get Myles Garrett is going to be
the moon.
All that, you know, that blockbuster deal you made for Steph Diggs. You might have to give Steph Diggs up in that trade to get Myles Garrett plus a draft pick. That kind of thing. I'm exaggerating. I don't think that would really happen. But yeah, that's what you're talking about. You have to give up something you really love to make that deal happen. And plus, then you've got Von Miller and Myles Garrett. Awesome, it's great. But now you don't have a guy like Steph Diggs, or you don't have Gabe Davis and James Cook. You know, you have to give two of those guys, or two twos, and those guys. You're talking about an absolutely massive haul for the best pass rusher in the game. It would be exorbitant. So the team that you're trading to make better would actually get a great player in return, but you'd be decimated in other parts of your roster and in your draft capital, in my opinion. I think it would be a massive haul unless you could get Cleveland to do it for less. I mean, you know, I don't know what the parameters of the deal would be. A really complicated deal because Buffalo would have to think they're getting better as a team. And so would Cleveland. What's that look like?
Yeah.
If you're going to put Myles Garrett here, were you going to trade him Von Miller for Miles and throw it in the deal? I mean, that's what you're talking about. You have to give him something.
On to a much more important question out of the mailbag, Steve.
Let's hear it.
John asks, what is your Easter dinner?
Ham, always.
It's ham, baby.
Ham, scalloped potatoes, cheesy potatoes.
Yeah, we got a.
I love those things.
We got a ham waiting for us.
Yeah, and we plus I don't know if you, about you, but we have, you know, a huge get together.
Yeah,
when I say huge. It's yeah.
Usually, we are on vacation this time of year. We're usually getting out of the weather, and we're down
right.
south. We did it earlier this year, so. My wife's family, which is in all of Western New York, they're all over the place. So, like, they're all on vacation.
Oh, they're
like,
left. They left. Yeah. So it's just you guys.
It's us and a couple of stragglers.
Kids coming home?
Nope. Nope.
Look at you.
So we got the smallest ham we've ever bought. It's tiny. Now, here's my next question.
You had to open it with a little key on the side of the can.
No, it's not even a canned one. It's not even a canned one. Here's my next question, though. Do you have anything to put on the ham in terms of a sauce or enhancer?
I would say no. We don't need. I'm
a spicy brown mustard fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I get it.
Because I put those on hot dogs,
mm-hmm.
and ham is
mustard
only a few steps removed from
I'll
hot
say
dogs.
This. I'm kind of yellow mustard is my condiment of choice, not the spicy brown so much.
Your deli mustard, your yellow
yes,
deli
that's
mustard.
Right. Yes,
I'm spicy brown. Every time, 100 out of 100. I almost never use deli mustard. I will only use yellow deli mustard in the absence of spicy brown mustard.
See, I'm a mustard guy, not a ketchup guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
I find that anyone under the age of 30 does not use mustard.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened, but we got to generation, what is that? The millennials,
Z?
Or is that Generation Z? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I think it's.
But
yeah,
it's like
know.
Mustard is their mortal enemy.
Gen Z,
nobody
Gen
uses
X.
mustard. I don't know what happened. Where did we lose?
They'll grow into it.
It's yeah, but I liked mustard when I was young.
It's
like when
immature.
I was a teenager, I
yeah.
put it on a hot pretzel.
See, I'm a mustard on hot dog guy.
As am I.
And all my younger generation, of course, all the grandkids, they put ketchup on everything. But
yes,
they're ketchup people.
Well, I am a major ketchup person, but when it comes to a hot dog, what's right is right. Like mustard's got to go on.
It's
there.
A morality issue.
And a hot pretzel, I'm putting spicy brown mustard on that.
Yeah.
A lot of deli sandwiches, spicy brown mustard. You know, that's just the way it rolls.
Yeah, that same with me. Yeah.
Ketchup is for burgers. You know, that kind of stuff.
I am a ketchup on my burger, with mustard, too, though.
Oh,
yes.
You double it up.
Yeah, I do.
That's a big New England thing, ketchup and mustard
oh,
on
really?
A burger. Yeah. So here's the thing. Growing up in the New York metropolitan area, you go to a fast food burger joint, and they give you a squirt of ketchup on the burger you get automatically.
Right.
You get up in New England, and you go to those same burger chains, they put ketchup and mustard on
oh,
the burger
so
when
know.
You get it.
They have corporate standards. They change. I wonder where the demarcation line
I
is.
I want to say it's like halfway through Connecticut.
Yeah, okay.
And then all of a sudden you're just like, whoa, wasn't expecting that.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like a regional.
But that's, yeah, big. This is, yeah, the Easter holiday that everybody
has. Ham.
Yeah,
ham
I
is
think it's
like.
It's almost like turkey
it's
and Thanksgiving.
A staple.
Yeah, it's a staple. It's a staple.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah.
E-Horst asks, somehow all my Bills buddies let me get married on April 30th. So for 10 years, I have had to record the draft and abstain from all forms of social media for 3 to 4 days as my bride and I mark our anniversary by traveling somewhere nice. What was I thinking? Well, clearly you weren't thinking,
clearly you've
E-Horst.
You've answered your own question, E-Horst.
You weren't
you were
thinking.
Not thinking.
And it was a fateful error in your planning.
One of the brilliant moves I made in my life was marrying my wife on her birthday.
Oh, pretty hard to forget your anniversary.
Double the penalty if you don't. If you do, but nevertheless,
right.
But because it's kind of a deal where it's anniversary / birthday on the same day, it was a brilliant move, I thought, and it has turned out to be.
Yeah.
A long-lasting gift.
That's pretty interesting. I would submit this, E-Horst, and see if you can pull this one off. You say you mark your anniversary by traveling somewhere nice. The next time the draft's in Las Vegas, you might be able to swing that.
Go to Kansas City for your
And then play dumb. And then play dumb and just, you know, Kansas City's probably not a destination you can convince her to go to. But Vegas, the next time the draft is in Las Vegas, you say, hey, honey, let's go on a trip to Vegas. It'll be fun. Oh, Kansas look City, at that. The draft's here. I had no idea.
I'll say this, though. Kansas City, I'm from out there. Not Kansas City itself, but the state, Kansas. Kansas City's worth visiting. The Plaza, Westport, go to a Royals game.
Good eating.
The barbecue is fantastic. Yeah, you could swing that. And it, in fact, you start now.
Start planning.
Start now. And I could tell you maybe in 5 years you could have evolved into a point where it's a yearly trip to the draft rather than
somewhere else.
Yeah. You got to start. You got to lay groundwork, and
you have to do far more planning than you did for your wedding day.
Right, and it's absolutely an evolution. It's not going to just happen overnight. But if you can start making it, laying the groundwork, and you do it the proper way, I'm thinking in half a decade, it could be an annual trip to the NFL draft, and there you've won.
In a big way.
In a big way.
All right, we got to
turn the negative into a positive.
That's right. we got to take a break here. But more final questions from the OBL fan mailbag next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live for one final segment. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and the fan mailbag remains open for a few more minutes. And the next question comes from Justin, who says, what do you guys think we need to do to get over this hump? We've proven in the regular season that we can beat KC, Baltimore, the Rams, etc., but we can't get it done in the playoffs. What say you? Because I'm not getting any younger. Steve, I believe this is where you lay out your dissertation that you've laid out a half dozen times before. They are good enough to win it, but what do they have to do in the playoffs?
You got to play good on that day.
That's it.
You got to play good on the day you play them in the playoffs. You play good in the regular season. You're good enough to do it. You're good enough to beat them. Even when they play well, you're good enough to beat them when you play your game. The Bills are good enough now. There is no magic elixir that is going to put the Bills over the hump. They have been good enough for 3 years to go to and win the Super Bowl. But you got to play well on the day you line up. It's going to be a different team, different roster this year. There's always changes that happen. But you got Brandon Bean, you got Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, Steph Diggs, Von Miller. You got this whole crew of guys that are going to be really, really good again this year. The key is when the playoffs hit and the chips are on the line, do you have the guys and the mentality to step up and play your best in that moment?
Yeah.
That's the magic elixir.
That's your answer. Jake, last one in the mailbag. How would you guys feel about the Bills trading back to the mid to late 30s, gain an extra 4 or 5, and take one of my two favorite linebackers, Jack Campbell or Drew Sanders? Can always grab an offensive tackle like Bergeron, Mauch, Duncan, and or build a fit like Blake Freeland later on. I'm in favor of that, provided there isn't value at two positions. If there isn't value at receiver at 27 and there isn't value at offensive tackle at 27, I'm all for getting out and going and getting the linebacker a little further back in round two. And as I said on the air yesterday or earlier this week, Drew Sanders is my guy. I know a lot of people like Jack Campbell. I'd be happy with that too. And Steve and I have been looking at tape on tackles this week to try to catch up. We like Duncan. I like Duncan a lot. I think that kid's got a high ceiling out of Maryland, Jalen Duncan. I think it could be a good pick for the Bills.
And my guy Darnell Wright is coming in for a visit tomorrow.
Yep. He's a round one guy.
We think it's tomorrow.
And he's a round one guy, so if he's there, all four taking him.
If you take him at one or whatever, so it'll be interesting. Yeah. We'll see.
We are off tomorrow. We will see you back here on Monday at 1. Don't forget to listen to our podcast, Bills by the Numbers. We'll see you. Have a great Easter.